This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We're thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Anthony Sorkin. Dr. Sorkin's had a remarkable career. He's an orthopedic trauma surgeon who now is the chief of population health at Indiana University Health. IU Health is a great, great health system. Also did a fellowship at the Hospital for Special Surgery, HSS. A remarkable career. Dr. Sorkin, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure, and thank you, Scott, for having me on. I appreciate the invitation. I started out, as you mentioned, as an orthopedic trauma surgeon. I still practice at a Methodist hospital in Indianapolis. I also am lucky enough to be partaking of an administrative role with our population health group as the executive medical director and overseeing some of the larger aspects of our value-based care initiative along with our ACO. I started out in private practice, and some would say I'm swimming the opposite way here. So I've started out in private practice, and now I'm fully involved with an academic health center, one of the largest academic health centers in the country. So that's a little bit about me.
No, a magnificent career. And talk about Director of Population Health. What is that like? You're at IU. What do you view as the core role and your top priorities in the role of Chief of Population Health?
Well, I think we have multiple different avenues that we're pursuing that we find critical for our success. In particular, a heavy emphasis in my role is helping to coordinate our post-acute activities, something that's really been, exacerbated or certainly we're much more aware and much more keen of the importance of our post-acute activities with COVID. And so throughout all of this, my role has been to organize a collaborative or a network of post-acute vendors. About 40% of our Medicare risk spend occurs in the post-acute space, and it's certainly, as we can tell, a very vulnerable population. So we spend a significant amount of time with that. Of course, on the list of obvious things with population health and Medicare risk payer sources, we're very concerned with our risk adjustment. And so many systems have found that kind of the starting off point with population health, but certainly improving the accuracy of risk adjustment provides the revenue for other assorted activities. And then my particular role, we spend a lot of time looking through our claims data and trying to identify opportunities for innovation and improvement. So we have a healthcare economic group, and we spend a significant amount of time with that.
There's so much talk today about population health, and there's different discussions about what works and what doesn't work. And you know, if you talk to vendors, every vendor says they have a perfect solution. If you just use this app or that app, we're going to save you millions of dollars, and we're going to fix the health of all of your population. Help us understand the truth about what works and doesn't work in population health. Just a sense of what kind of activities or efforts you see sort of working, and what are you more skeptical of?
Well, so I agree. There are a lot of vendors that if they could just download your claims data, they'll show you the 10 things that you need to do to make money and be more successful. And I think I'm very lucky at IU that we have been given an opportunity to have an adventure and find our own opportunities. And I think that one of the things that I think allows us to be successful is we have many clinical leaders that are very involved in population health. And then we find relatable opportunities for improvement through our own claims data without having a multitude of vendors pointing us in a certain direction. And I think one of the big lessons I've learned early on is unless you have some sort of relationship with a clinical leader, or if the masses or the people that you're trying to instruct and provide a roadmap for efficiency, unless they believe in that earnestly, then it's very difficult to just take a mandate based on a consultant and fire that across an entire system. And we have a very large health system. And we have learned the lessons of, if you just use this one order set for community acquired pneumonia, all will be fine. We have to find ways to have a relationship with the solution. And a great example of that is we were looking to launch an initiative in congestive heart failure. And we had, we have lots of experts in congestive heart failure at IU, and we have a good cross-section between private practice, community physicians, as well as academics. And the one exercise that we performed, which is something we do regularly now, is we just took a look at claims data and looked to see which primary care physicians had the best outcomes from a diagnosis of congestive heart failure. And it turns out there was one physician in Bloomington, which is one of our big academic health centers. And so we got in the car, drove down there, and walked into the physician's office and said, "What makes you so spectacular at a very low inpatient admission rate, very low readmission rate?" And he said he walked across the street and told the ER not to admit his patients and simply to call his office, and he would handle their fluid overload. And that's a great example of sometimes the most obvious opportunities are those that are right in front of you. And so we adopted a process that we're still going through, where we're just slowing down our ER admissions and trying to redirect back to primary care. And it's sometimes those simple things that lead to the best outcomes.
But what's so refreshing about it in the perspective is this, is that so often somebody says, we looked at 100 different physicians, 100 different claims data, and we went to the worst performing one and tried to get him to fix it. And what I heard from you was something very different and very enlightening and just magnificent, was we went to the one with the best record on this and said, what are you doing? Why is it working? What's going on? And what you really found was it was a different level of attention to patients that led that physician to say, this is what I'm doing, and this works, and here's how it works. And it's a magnificent approach. It's also, you've had this remarkable career, and you know, there's a leaving the ego at the door, and I guess you have to. You're an orthopedic trauma surgeon. You've been with a magnificent private practice, well-recognized, Rockford. I know some of the physicians, largely alpha physicians, that type of person. And it's an unusual orthopedic surgeon that says, let me go talk to the primary care doctor and understand what he's doing right so I can make sure we're doing it throughout the system. And that must take a certain amount of leadership, a certain amount of just learning, or it must be innate in you, leaving the ego at the door.
Well, I appreciate all the kind words. I think that everybody is trying to do the right thing. There's not somebody out there that's maliciously trying not to take their best care of patients. But I think you bring up a good point, and it's something that a while back I was the medical director of the orthopedic service line at IU, and so we were comparing and had an opportunity to compare and contrast which physicians are doing well at joint replacements and which ones, meaning in efficiency standpoint, and which ones aren't. And that was part of the CJR program, so the government bundled payment program. And we adopted a kind of a process outcome matrix where we would look at the outcomes from top to bottom of all of the orthopedic surgeons at IU. And we just backed it up a step and looked at their process and their structure leading to those outcomes, kind of the Donabedian analysis. And it lends itself, if you pay only attention to the bottom quartile, you're not learning the successes of the top. So I appreciate that, Scott. I mean, that's exactly, in my opinion, what needs to be done. And I think people, that's what I meant by familiarizing yourself with or having a relatable outcome. If you put up a screenshot of the outcomes to congestive heart failure of various community-based primary care practices, some just pop out right at you that are doing very well. And it lends itself to the physicians in the middle or on the bottom to say, hey, what are you doing that I'm not doing that's getting you this, rather than just simply chastising or mandating change in the bottom. And I think that's one of the things that I was bringing up, maybe not as directly as I could have been with the order sets or whatever it is. Mandates don't work as well as learning from those that are being successful and trying to cascade that, not only cascade down, but have those that are at the bottom see the cascading and want to be up at the top. And that's something that we really work hard at.
And another point that comes out of your discussion is sort of vendor-driven approaches. Well, they may be magnificent, don't work either unless somebody at the system is really engaged in it at a different level to really embrace it and make that vendor-based solution their own, to really drive it, and like to really dig in and say, this is a problem we want to solve, and yes, this vendor can help us do it, where somebody just cascading a vendor solution to you is not really effective. I guess another question I have for you is, Dr. Sorokin, is, you come from this remarkable private practice. I'm very familiar with Rockford Orthopedic Associates, magnificent practice. You then take another step in your career and decide, I want to transition, I want to try something different, get involved in leadership, go to an academic medical center, come from a great group. You're having a great career, another phase of a great career. What advice would you have for physicians that are scared to make change, that sort of like they've got a great practice, they're with a remarkable practice, but they want to do something different, they want to make changes. What advice would you have for surgeons, doctors, anyone trying to have a great career?
Well, I just think it's important to follow your passion. And you know, I was lucky enough, I literally started out just in a private practice. When I say just, meaning that we had a very loose academic affiliation you're aware of, but, and then residents from Rush started to come out to Rockford. And then, you know, that was all great, but I just felt that there was more work to be done. And I had great opportunities in Rockford, but an opportunity opened up. And I think you have to be willing to fulfill that inner voice that you have, that you want to take a step in another avenue. And I'm still an orthopedic trauma surgeon. I still take call and take care of people on weekends and holidays. And my partners down here are great, but they also allow me the ability to pursue this other part of my career now that I'm very passionate about. You know, I think it's something when you see an opportunity to improve the care of people, I think you grab at it. And one of the reasons why CMS is having all of these payment programs is that they know, we all know, there's opportunity for improvement. And I feel as a leader in this area that each step that we take to improve care from the standpoint that I'm from where I am now, each step that we take can improve the care over a much larger swath than I'm able to fixing a femur on a Saturday night. And so it's just all about perspective and how you think that you can affect outcomes. And it's exciting, which is to say there's a lot of opportunity for improvement, right? That's what makes it exciting, is that each change you make can really change the barometer of how care is delivered to individuals. And so I think my advice to the residents and the fellows is, don't be afraid to pursue that dream. We all have the day job. We all have things that we can lean back on, but you should always pursue those things that you find exciting.
No, and I think it's magnificent advice. And you do have the day job. It pays the bills. It takes care of the family. It does what you have to do. But then you're able to also pursue this part of you that's a passion that's very exciting, which is to have impact at scale and see things sort of really, as you use the word, cascade to different places and have different impacts. It's really a fascinating way to go about one's career, and we salute you for it. Dr. Sorokin, I want to thank you for joining us in the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just a pleasure to visit with you. I've got so many more questions, but we try and keep these 10, 15 minutes or so, which seems to be what our listeners love the most. And so we'll stop at this point. I want to thank you very much for joining us. Just magnificent.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I appreciate it. Thank you, Scott.